This is CliffCentral.com. Black life is not a color, it's a lifestyle on CliffCentral.com.
It's Thursday, it's 3 minutes past 11, and I have some superbulous guests this Thursday afternoon. My name is Monwabi Sitete, and my co-host is somewhere doing baby duty, and I think I was puking last week when I was absent, when we had a sex therapist, and Katesh was talking business with a sex therapist. Now, I can expect the stupidity from Tumisho, but I didn't expect it from you, Katesh. Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey. Good, good, good. Welcome to the show. It's Thursday.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And interesting having a business conversation on a topic that we wouldn't normally be talking about.
Yeah, sex. Could you guys not get deeper, ask her to like take her clothes off, to give you guys like the right massages, you know?
You know what? We actually needed you for that. I think we were polite.
Hey.
We were polite. We were asking great questions. We were really trying to keep it above board.
You guys were killing me. I could slit my wrists all the way from Cape Town in a BMW 7 Series listening to Cliff Central.
I want to know why you weren't here. I mean, a topic like that, you should have been here. So what were you doing?
And the funny part is, I arranged the damn sex therapist.
No, exactly. Mind.
That was Dumisha's job. But it was just, you know, one of those spur of the moment trips, and you know. It is what it is.
Yeah, so from our side, we're quite proud. We managed to have a decent conversation.
Yeah, decent. Katesh, you're leaving off where Dumisha joined us. Eh? But we're also joined by a young man. He'll introduce himself, because he changed his name so many times I don't remember, you know. So you know how these youngsters are these days. They just change their names and, you know, change where they're coming from, you know.
Exactly. I mean, I think
who does that?
Prince. I think Prince comes to mind, you know.
Right,
he was
the first
guy who changed his name, looked the same.
Yeah. So what's your name, young man?
Yeah, it's called the power of volition.
Okay, speak closer to the mic.
The power of volition, that's
right.
What it's called, the power of self-description.
Okay.
So you can decide how you want to be defined, how you want to be called.
Right.
Yeah, my name is Mohale wa Morena, and it's a pleasure to be here today.
Okay. Now, your name wasn't always Mohale wa Morena, right?
Yes, it wasn't.
So how did you get that right?
It was an interesting experience. I went through, a few years ago, I went through a very intense sort of spiritual experience, I would like to call it. And, you know, it basically, you know, had to do with me also having a revelation in the area of what names are all about.
Okay.
And yeah, so it's there's a lot of detail to it, which we might not be able to discuss right now.
Okay.
But I then made the decision to change to that particular name because of that inspiration. So it was something deeper than just what my mind had.
Take us through the spiritual journey.
Okay. All right. Let me take you through the spiritual
journey.
Yeah,
I'd love to. I'd love to hear.
So I'm a Christian.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had this experience a few years ago where I kept introducing myself by my name.
Okay, what was your biological name?
Yeah, the name I was given. I had many names, like most African children.
100 names.
Yes.
Yeah. So. Normally we have other names because nobody can pronounce ours.
No. It took me a while, Katesh.
That's right.
Yeah, but you know, the name that I was probably most known by was Bongani.
Okay.
So I kept introducing myself to people. So I had actually had already had this inspiration to change my name.
Okay.
And like I said, it was a spiritual revelation, and I knew what my new name was supposed to be.
Was this when you were younger or
when
at what
I was
point?
Younger, probably about not too younger, probably about in the past 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The past
okay.
6 years, 6-7 years or so. So yeah, so I kept introducing myself everywhere I went. But people kept hearing the name that I knew that I was supposed to rename myself by.
Wow.
And, you know, so that's what they would address me by.
Yes.
It was very scary. And I actually didn't want to change my name.
Right.
Because I thought, you know, this is my name. It represents
who I am,
where I come from.
Right.
The people who know me by my name. I've established an identity with my name, you know, and, you know, however fledgling, a track record.
That's right.
You know,
that's right. I mean, it's mainly people in the entertainment industry that have another name.
Exactly.
Alias or.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And I wasn't in the entertainment industry.
Right.
So nevertheless, I, you know, then decided, you know, how I got to decide was because...
Wait. But how do you just get to change your name? I mean, what names... Were you not happy with the names? Were they not appealing to you?
But that's why I just said. I just said I actually didn't want to change my name.
Right.
But it was such a compulsion. And it became really, you know, scary. And I realized that there was a greater influence behind... You know, this entire thing,
right?
Or behind me changing my name, that I had to eventually start paying attention to it. I didn't want to do it because, like I said, you know, I was okay with my name.
So other people were hearing the name that you thought you needed to change your name to,
which was very weird.
I mean, that is weird. I mean,
that's very weird.
If you're literally getting outside feedback that's saying, well, your name should
exactly.
be.
And now here's the interesting thing, which is, you know, how I actually got to accept the change was because I was with some friends of mine one evening. We went to an event, you know, and it was actually a church event on a Sunday evening. And we came out and we had some coffee with some of the, you know, delegates.
Yes.
And I was introducing myself to people again. And the same thing happened in the presence of my two friends.
Wow.
With whom I lived at the time. So they witnessed it.
But wasn't that a little scary for you at the same time? I mean, it was like, what is this?
No, man, I don't understand. So they call you by this name and you didn't know why people were calling you by this name.
No, I knew. That's what I said. In the beginning, I said, I already knew that this is what I need to change my name to. But I didn't want to.
But how did people just call you with that name?
Well, it was weird to me too.
That's something that's unexplained.
I'm trying to find meaning to it.
No, well, it's so, I so think what, here's, what, the sim- here's the simplest yeah? way I can explain it.
Yeah.
That which is physically observable has its root in that which is not seen. So it is the unseen that creates the seen.
Right.
So what I'm trying to basically say is that life is primarily spiritual and not physical.
Yes. Yes. I can hear what you're saying.
So there is a spirit world.
But you're paid to understand what everyone is saying. So you don't count.
I understand the spiritual side of things. So
do you?
I do. I mean, you get a feeling. Some things are unexplained. And I can understand what he's saying. He had a feeling.
Yeah.
It was deeper than something you'd sort of rationalize or you could really think through,
yeah.
and then at some point you get to a point of I accept.
Yes, because there are all of these, you know, influences which are beyond your reasoning, and they are so strong and so impactful that you cannot deny that this is real, and that's, you know, there is in reality a spirit world and a physical world, and the spirit world influences the physical world.
Hey, I'm still confused. How, though, are we... Like, how do you... So, they called you by this name.
Yes.
Mohale wa Moren.
Well, they called me Mohale.
Okay. And Mohale is a Sotho Tswana word?
Sotho name.
Sotho name?
Yeah.
Meaning mercy.
No, it means hero. Another synonym is champion.
Okay.
So, what happened was when I actually accepted... Because after that night, I actually thought to myself, okay... Let me just go and do a bit of research about this name.
Right.
And I did a lot of research about the name and I discovered that the meaning was actually quite deep. And I could actually see myself and my unique proclivities and interests and sort of my trajectory in life in that name.
Okay.
You know, so when I studied it out, it literally means one, it either means champion or hero. But the explanation says, one who obtains victories on behalf of others.
Right. And you identified with all that?
Identified with all of that.
And what was your God-given names or on your dompas or your birth certificate?
I can't tell you all of those. I told you, I'm an
okay,
African
give
child.
Yeah,
so many
yeah.
names.
Okay, but
you got a lot of
on
names.
On your ID.
I gave you the one that matters.
The one that you inherited.
Yes.
Okay.
So, did you go and change your name now?
The others
legally?
Don't really matter. Why they don't matter?
Why don't they matter?
No, why they don't matter was because hardly anybody even knew me by those names, except the one name, which was Bongani.
Okay, which is a Zulu name. So you've
which
moved
is,
from a Zulu
which is yeah.
moved from a Zulu name to a Sotho name.
To a Sotho name.
But, oh, you gone done it now.
But that makes sense because I am Sotho.
Okay, but who gave you Bongani?
That's the weird part. My father did.
So then you've practically denounced your name, or the name, your birth name.
Yes, I have.
So
because Monobisi, names are more than just a label. Names are meant to be a prophetic announcement of a child's destiny.
Okay, Bongani means let us be thankful.
Yes, that's a nice name. There's nothing wrong with the name.
Right.
Yes, it just does not speak to my destiny. So let me give you an example.
Hey,
let me give you an example.
Give me an example.
I told you I'm a Christian, right?
Yeah.
So in the Bible, there was this guy called Jacob. You know the story of Jacob?
Yeah,
They say he stole his brother's birthright, you know, but that's arguable. But Jacob one day, you know, was struggling with an angel, like wrestling literally with an angel.
Okay.
Because he wanted God to bless him. And, you know, you might not know this, but the name Jacob means supplanter. It means swindler.
Yes, swindler.
it literally means crook, you know. So while he's wrestling he's having this spiritual experience, wrestling with the angel and asking God to bless him. The angel says to him, look, I can't bless you with that kind of a name. So he changes his name from Jacob, which means swindler.
Yes, crook.
To Israel, which means praise.
Hmm.
Because he could not, there are certain things he could not access from the realm of the spirit with that kind of a prophetic announcement over his life.
Sure.
That's the one side of it. There are other people whose names weren't bad.
Right. You understand? They still change.
You know, there is Saul of Tarsus who was changed to Paul.
Right.
There was Simon, whose name was changed to Peter, one of the disciples of Jesus Christ.
Right.
Why did he have to change his name? Well, okay, his name actually had a negative connotation because Simon means reed. But you get people like Paul, you get, you know, Abraham.
Right.
Was not always Abraham.
Abram.
He was Abram. Abram.
Okay.
You know. And Abram, what Abram or Abram, you know, whichever way you want to pronounce it, means is assumed father. So there's nothing bad about that.
Mm.
But Abraham, more, you know, sort of specific to his destiny in life, means father of nations.
Yeah.
And that's what he was.
But now that begs the question. A lot of us, obviously, the name we get is from birth.
Yeah.
We accept that.
Yes.
The rest of our life, we use it. Very few will go change. I want to know whether you actually legally changed it.
I mean,
I've been in that process.
It's a little bit difficult to finalize because, you know, they want to check if you're not trying to run away from anything. You know.
Approval.
It must be difficult. I mean, that's the first question I'll have in my mind. Why are you changing your name?
Yeah.
Are you changing an identity? Are you running away from
So I had to submit an entire application and, you know, with the whole I kept the rationale as sort of peripheral as I could. You know, I didn't take it to the extent that I'm having the conversation with you guys here. You know, but so I'm dealing with that process, you know. But yeah, so I mean, people don't realize just how powerful names are, you know.
I'm going to add the business spin to the names because here's the thing. A lot of people if you deal with China or deal with someone else, you'll get an email from someone called Apple or Moon or some other name. But the real name is something completely different. You would not be able to pronounce it. But they use other names that you are familiar with and you're comfortable with.
Right.
So the names people use. You know, I grew up in an environment where some people's names are not their legal names, purely because they were in the business environment and they needed an easy name for people to remember.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the guy was called Roy. And meanwhile, if you actually looked at his ID, he probably had three or four other names that nobody else would be able to pronounce.
Right.
So I can see, you know, people using different names, but to actually have some sort of vision of a different name and then actually going ahead and changing it and now using it, that's something unique and different. I mean, a lot of people think it, but would never go through.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you started a company today, you know, you would take some time to really think about the name of your company, and the name of your company would have almost everything to do with what the envisaged destiny or the envisaged goal or ultimate end or purpose of that company is.
Right.
So you name it according to its purpose. You know?
Correct. Or some other significance. So a company name could be linked to a person's surname, name, his father's name, or something of that. I'm not Christian, but I went to a Christian school, so I remember something in the common room that used to, and I think it's Psalms.
Sure.
A good name is better than all riches.
That's right.
Right. So that's
Oh, Kadesh.
That's right. Not bad for. That's not bad for a Hindu, right?
You're close enough, but it's Proverbs.
It's a proverb, exactly. It's Proverbs. Yeah. So I just remember that being in the common room, and I think that was one of the drivers when I started my business, and I named it Sun Advisory, which was linked to my surname. But I had that thought somewhere.
Right.
But I think you're right. We do associate company names with what one believes in or what you're trying to project.
Yeah. Very interesting. I mean, this now ties in back to, I mean, names we can go. So what does your name mean, Kitesh?
I don't actually know what my name is. I don't.
Do you care?
I don't actually.
And your kids? Have you named your kids anything?
But I can tell you something. My surname is Sundar Singh. Now, the first time I realized it meant something is I walked into a store one day, and the guy asked me what is my name. So I gave him my name and my surname, and then he looked at me and he laughed and he said, "No, you're making that up." And I'm like, what do you mean I'm making that up? So Sundar Singh, Sundar is normally beautiful or whatever. And so the guy says, nah, you just made that up. That's not your surname. So there is definitely meaning. I don't know what my first name is, but
Did anyone explain it to you? Was it important to you?
It wasn't important to me. And I suppose my parents died younger, and it was never an issue because I went to a different environment. It was not a big thing. But I do know when you're born, they would look up the dates, and they would have certain letters that your name should be made up with.
So there's a lot of thought
that goes into it. So if you're born at a certain time of day, a certain date, they'll say the name should have a K and it should have an H. And therefore, a lot of the names that people come up with that are made up purely because those letters had come up at the time of birth, and then they get given a name appropriate to that. And I can understand that afterwards you could want a different name. I mean, we broke with tradition on my kids. We tried to, instead of having longer names, having shorter names, so that when you're filling it out, it doesn't become a big challenge.
that process can be quite tedious as
correct.
Well, though.
And you want the friends to be able to pronounce it, right? So you write it in a way that people pronounce the English language.
But did you have like Hindu names, or did you have like English names, or I mean, how did you decide? Okay, this one is going to be called this, and that one is going to be called that.
So here's the thing. There is a list of names, and family get involved. So there is names, regular names that Hindu people would name kids. Although as time goes by, they become a little old-fashioned. So people then try to make permutations of names.
Yeah.
And if they've got letters, they try and join, you know, maybe the father's name and the mother's name and create a name. So a lot of names are now being created. But there are some traditional ones that one can go back to. And if you look at old movies, you'll see those names come up. But I think as we're starting to look at modern names, most of us are trying to keep it short, trying to keep it that if you said it to somebody, because old days you didn't sign too many car park slips and all that sort of thing. So now you do. Now you don't want a name that doesn't even fit on that little space, right?
They give you.
So my son.
How stupid is that?
Exactly.
Little names, eh?
Correct. So if you have like a long name like Kitesh Sundar Singh, or and if I had a middle name, can you imagine how difficult that could be? So we've sort of like cut it back and said, okay, my son's name's got to be very clear, 5 letters, easy. So if you say it to somebody, they can write it without saying. I mean, I get asked all the time, how do you spell that? And it's still wrong afterwards.
Yeah.
I accept it, but I think as we go forward, we want to make it easy.
It's funny that you say that because, you know, like, have you now changed your surname, Mohale?
Well, that's what I said. I'm working on that.
So, Wamorena, would that be your surname?
My new surname, yeah.
So Mohale Wamorena is not your name.
Mohale is my name. Okay. Wamorena is my surname.
Okay. And what's your biological surname?
Matebe.
Okay. Sure. this is very interesting. I find it fascinating that like other people wish that they had like, you know, their dads and that name them and blah blah blah. And here's this dude who's like, hey, no, me, I'm not about that life, eh?
It's not quite like that. I mean, remember, I wrestled with this for a while because of such reasons.
Okay.
I thought this is the name that I got from my dad. This is where I come from. This is me.
This is lineage. Yeah.
This is lineage.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? But I had to sort of ascend cerebrally to a place of understanding that lineages are started by men.
Okay.
And through the course of history, there have been lineages that have been started, new lineages. It's like when Abraham became Abraham, he started a new lineage. I would imagine that, you know, his parents wouldn't have understood why does this man have to change his name to this? And there are many other people who've had this experience, even in contemporary times.
But not black people. I must be very honest with you. This is the first.
Not black people.
Like black people, you can do it all the time. Like, well, they track their stuff like from Ireland and all these places. You know, like
let me make it like, more complicated for you.
Yeah,
Certain people in India and some in South Africa, where the kid's surname would be the father's first name. So to track your lineage in that situation is exceptionally difficult because you're born, I'm so and so, but then my son would use my first name as his surname.
And
then that goes further and further. So it can become quite complicated. But the one thing I want to ask you is by having changed your name, I mean, that is an administrative nightmare.
Yeah,
because
it is. Home affairs.
Because first of all, there's home affairs.
Yeah.
But I think I've grown up in an environment where we had three names in the house.
Right.
So my name was Sundar Singh with an H. My father was a Sundar Singh. He didn't have an H due to a spelling mistake of the previous government.
Okay.
And then before that, my sister was a Singh.
Okay.
So she wasn't Sundar Singh.
Okay.
Okay. So my father had the Sundar Singh only because he graduated and on his certificate it said Sundar Singh. But his ID document actually said Singh.
Mm.
So he's late. And I was managing trying to put his estate together.
Oh boy.
And can you imagine trying to prove to somebody that the ID that says this and the bank account that says something else
belongs to the same person?
They belong to the same person.
Yeah.
I mean, this could really turn out to be
a nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, you almost have to have every single document done properly.
Absolutely. I mean, but these are just the realities of the structures we have to deal with in the
world. So what happened at Home Affairs? Now you get there and you want to change to this name. I mean, what?
Yeah, so well, you have to fill in documentation, and then, you know, the big question Home Affairs asks you is, okay, so who is this person that you are now changing? Especially now, the first name is easy. The surname is actually where the problem lies. Where, especially with my kind of surname, where there is no other person who has that name.
So they
usually assume that that you are changing either to your father's surname, you know, your estranged father's surname, or you know, something or the other. And they discover, no, that's not the case with me. So, okay, so where does this name of yours come from?
Right.
You know, and I say, no, this is why I reached this decision to change my name this way, which is new. They don't know how to deal with it. And that's why I've been having these.
I can imagine. Imagine an abridged birth certificate that has somebody else's name and now you've changed it. That abridged birth certificate on travel would be what? You'd have a problem.
Problem, absolutely.
Because now you've changed the name. Your passport would be in a different name. Your abridged birth certificate would be completely different.
Yeah.
So I mean, I take my hat off to you, but I think there's a lot of things that you'd have to do.
Absolutely, there are. I mean, I actually had to write an affidavit to, you know, to explain my entire thing. So. And like I said, I didn't take the conversation as deep as I did with you guys.
Yes,
I tried
yes.
to keep it as peripheral so that it just makes logical sense. You know.
Sure.
Yeah. So I put it together. But I mean, think about names, Monavisi. If I had to ask you guys.
Right.
You were talking about lineage a moment ago, okay? And you were citing lineage as something very important when you make such considerations as changing names. But let me throw the question back to you. Where really is the significance of lineage? What is the significance of lineage?
Well, for me, it's quite important in that you know,
and I'm not saying it's not important.
Yeah,
I want to get your perspective on its significance.
Yeah, you see, my perspective on it is that, you know, when you, like, for example, our history is orated to us. Mm. So, for example, umonwabisi loyiso tete umtungwa kolela inkomos gayengwan, you know, that type of stuff. So they give you the family heritage. So
yes,
the challenge with that is that if I don't like the Masingitas or the Yengwanes within that lineage, I will omit them from my clan names. Mm. So when people speak to you, they'll track you via your clan names.
Right.
Yes.
So now where my challenge is that because it's orated, it's not written. Mm-hmm. Right? For example, and I'm gonna make a blanket approach. Mm-hmm. Jews are very good at lineage stuff. They can track pre-Holocaust
because they keep records. Yeah.
Because they keep records.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's one gripe I have with that. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm not saying everyone does it. You know, before you call into Cliff Central and tell us, oh, against Jews, all sorts of things, or black, just relax, please. The other thing is that, for example, you might, Katesh, and we've discussed this before on a previous show, is, for example, you used to count the mangoes. Was it not mangoes?
Yes.
So 6, 12, 6, 12. So that kind of taught you that you came from an entrepreneurial environment.
Right.
So when you walk in, when you go into that space, your bloodline is not so... It's not a new territory. It's in your blood system.
Yes.
So the familiarity for me, there is some sort of level of familiarity. Now, take that and remove that. So, for example, if your dad had three wives, or your grandfather had three wives, né? And I find this urge to all of a sudden, you know, have another wife, or, you know, I won't know because I don't know my lineage.
Right.
So, and I'm not saying lineage is a good or bad thing. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying understand the genealogy that you come from and what it has and the dangerous things.
I think what he's saying is essentially he's saying all of that stays. The name of who in that line is,
are you changing
is changed.
I could tell you're changing.
No, you're changing. But you can't say that.
But you're changing it.
Okay, remember, your relationship to the past is with the people you've interacted with, right? So your relationship with your father, your grandfather, is still there.
Let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
What is your clan name?
Huh?
What is your clan name?
Well, about Wagankom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And your surname is Tete, right?
Right.
Are there people in your family tree, within that same Nkomo lineage,
right,
who have a different surname to Tete?
Yes.
Does that delegitimize the fact that they are part of your
clan?
No,
but they are recognized in the sort of the clan sayings, call it that. So when is Tagazelo, for example,
so all of their surnames are in the clan name.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting, because it's not the same with my family, and from both my sides, from both my dad's side and my mom's side.
Yeah, well, they obviously my dad's clan names wouldn't include my mom's because they made a new union.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, you do find in some clan names that you have people with a clan name that is not in, like, for instance, is Tete for instance in your clan name? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
You might find that it's not in there.
It might not be there.
I want to challenge him because it probably isn't there. There are a lot of clan names and the surname is not there.
Yes.
So how then do you delegitimize the fact that I belong to that clan just because then my name, either my forename or my surname are different?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Because ultimately, it's supposed to be about blood, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be about blood. And so for me, here's the thing. There are two things, actually. The big problem we have as Africans, and I like the fact that you mentioned how the Jews have a record of their history.
Right.
we are not as good at doing that. Even in contemporary times, it's something we don't take seriously.
Yes.
You know, I was reading an article recently on Times Live about the files and books and the sort of documents that were found in Timbuktu.
Yes.
Which have a lot of information regarding our history as Africans concerning, you know, key areas of development and technology and the sciences and so on and so forth, and discoveries that Africans made ages ago,
right.
And how that former President Thabo Mbeki tried to get those materials preserved,
right.
And of late those materials, you know, they built an entire center, trained people to preserve those materials, and because there was no funding allocated to that project of late, it went down,
sure.
To the extent that the center had to shut down, and sure. Guess who's now coming in to take over custodianship of African history?
The Dutch.
It's the Europeans, the French.
Sure.
So basically Africans, we wanna, you know, put up an image as if we really appreciate our history, but we don't demonstrate that by how we take care of our history and we record our history and we communicate our history. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I understand.
But coming back to the clans, the thing with the clans is that you belong to that clan, and your connection to that clan is by bloodline.
Right, right, right.
You understand what I'm saying? And you have different names within that clan, you know, some of which might not be even recognized within the clan name itself.
Right, right,
but
right.
But they are legitimate members of the clan nonetheless because of blood. You know, so that's the other thing. And talking about recording our history, how many do you know? How far back in your lineage,
right,
do you have information?
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Musical break, or we're actually going to go pay the bills. So after this break, we'll take over from there.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, no, it's happening in studio today. I mean, names to lineage to, you know, Mohale, you were saying something very important.
Yes, I was asking you.
Yes, yes, you're asking me this.
Yes, okay, I was cool. Asking you, how far back in your own lineage can you trace, or do you have data or information?
Well, that's, you know, okay, so let me start it here. Not really far, to answer your question.
Yeah.
My dad is probably still the only one who's alive, yeah, out of the whole set of brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And he's probably the only one who's got that. But somewhere along the line, it was captured, not in great detail, but it's still, to answer your question, not very far.
Yeah, I think that substantiates my point. And so the whole thing for me with changing of a name is,
yeah,
so the clan name, I still belong to the same clan. Because,
okay.
Because that's my bloodline. I can't change that.
No, you can't.
You know, in fact, I don't want to.
Right.
But my name as an individual is a personal label or emblem of my personal identity, which the product of my loins, okay, my offspring, will then inherit.
Wamure.
Yes, sir.
Hey. Yeah, no, it's hot. It's hot.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, you know, Katesh, something that, like, for me, something that I wanted to link from a business perspective is franchising, you know?
Yeah.
For example, we don't know where it comes from, but you know, okay, I want to own, like, that kind of brand, mm, and the association that comes with it and all of that. I mean, I know you owned a franchise of some sort.
Yes.
What actually got you into franchising, or into saying, I want that brand because it speaks to 1, 2, 3?
Yeah.
What was that for you? I mean, did you have the money? What was it, you know?
I tell you what, it's a question that probably everybody has on their mind, and I've evolved from the first time I entered into that business. I owned a Cardi's very long time ago. It was a period just after I finished articles, and I was a financial manager at MAN, Truck and Bus, and I thought, well, you know what, I needed to do, I don't know why, I always wanted to have businesses. And
did you save up money for it, eh?
I did have the money for it, but I think then when I look back at it now, I could see things that I could have done hugely different. But that time, the decision was quite simple.
Right.
What business could I do that one, had a bit of a brand, two, that I could afford, that the entry level of the franchise was
at a reasonable level that I could buy it?
Mm.
And three, could I manage it remotely? In other words, it wasn't going to be some kind of a product that I that could almost go off, or you needed to sell. It had a bit of longevity. Mm. And you could control it. That was my naive thinking of franchising. And then I went through the list and chose something. I thought, well, this is not too complicated.
I mean, Cardi's, you know, I wouldn't have thought, you know?
You know, well, what I thought was you simply buy the product. It's already set up. Mm. You simply then have to get a great location, get some staff. You can control it. And how difficult can it be? You know, right. You order the right product because you've got a franchise. That should be easy. And you know what? When you own something like that, you realize then I didn't know a lot of things. I could tell you the biggest thing for me that I learned in that perspective. But I came from a view of I needed to make extra money. I wanted to invest in a business, something I could control, something that on a weekly basis, Saturday morning, I could go to and have a look and set up the next week. Mm. That's all sort of made sense, right?
Mm.
I could manage this thing. And then you have this belief, this trust that if you buy a franchise, they're going to do it all for you. They're going to set it up. They're going to help you even choose the right location.
Right, right, right.
And you know what? When you owned one, you realize it's very, very different to that.
I mean, that was
the first thing. First, I was young. Mm. So when I look back, I didn't even think of the things that I talk about now. I mean, now I talk. Somebody asked me, how do I find the right idea?
Did it go down? Did you have to sell? Or
No. I eventually I did close it.
Okay.
As far as financially, it was making money. And,
okay. So why would you close something that's making money?
Because when you're younger, you look at opportunities that have a potential of delivering an amount of money that you think is hugely significant.
Right.
I think when you develop in your career and all of a sudden your income and your experience grows and your ability to earn income just grows in other areas, you realize I can't spend that much time on this. The return is not enough.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So although I was employing people.
Right.
And initially it was exciting. I was 23, 24.
Wow.
And
you had the money to do this.
Yes. And so
he's Indian.
Sure.
Well, here's the difference. I stayed at home. So when I qualified, all my money was mine. So I had some money, right? So this was the thing. And then I got the 101, which then you realize after a year that wait a second, I'm only busy, really, really busy, at Christmas.
Mm.
Valentine's Day was big, Mother's Day, Father's Day, not so big, and then the other thing is
back to school.
And I, what I didn't know about the market, and here's the thing, I learned that, and this is now, I didn't segment the market. I didn't know anything about segmenting the market.
Right,
I didn't even
think
about the market. I was thinking, oh, everybody wants a card. Oh, how easy is that? Everybody wants a gift. You know, so you're gonna come in and get a
bar. Always giving gifts. Yeah.
But it's not the same. You realize that a person coming in, for example, somebody that's Indian, white, would look at a card and it would have a small little squiggle on it and they'd love that card because it's so funny.
Mm.
On the other side, when I looked at essentially a black market that used to come in, needed a lot of words. They loved home.
What?
I promise you.
What do you know?
The cards that we would have, they loved shiny cards, roses. They loved really sweet words in it. And it was literally, when you looked at a card and opened it and it had like, congratulations,
yeah.
I never sold it.
Wow.
But if it opened the card and it had long words like, you've worked hard,
yeah.
You've reached the end of your journey, you know, the
right,
future
right,
is
right,
bright.
Right.
Those cards sold. And then I started learning about, wait a second, the product is not the same for everybody. A blank card didn't really sell.
Yeah.
I had to learn about, well, what kind of product did I have to keep in my cards? Because I was in Johannesburg, right? And I was in Park Station when they did the revamp.
Hmm.
Okay. So here was this revamped. And then I didn't take into account one critical element, which I always think about today that I missed. And that is, I wasn't used to public transport. But if you're taking public transport, when you walk inside that mall, you're thinking one thing. Get to my train, right?
Yeah,
I don't have 30 minutes to stand in your store and try and choose a great card.
Yeah.
So what was happening is that in that business, people took time. If you walked in, you're buying a friend of yours something. And you'd say, well, I need to think about him. What would he like? Would he like this? You need 20 minutes. People didn't have 20 minutes. So here we had a business that required a lot more shopping time, as it were.
Right.
And people were rushing off to make sure they don't miss the next train. Or in the morning, people were rushing off to get to work. Yeah. So you didn't have this opportune moment for someone to just hang around and do shopping.
Okay, so let's put it this way. Did you get your money back?
I did. So you made
your money back.
I did.
You didn't lose any money.
No, I didn't lose any money. That's why I made the decision to close rather than sell. It would have taken me too long to sell.
Okay.
And I had made a return on it. I'd run it for a few years. I mean, right. This wasn't a quick, setup. I'd run it for a few years, and at the end, I could make that decision to say, you know what?
Just close this
lease is coming up.
Yeah.
I'm gonna. But what was interesting is the franchise holder at that point, you know, also thought it was a great location. That's why I say to people now, is that although the franchisor is going to come and is going to select a location, ultimately it's going to be you that's going to run that business. So actually, you need to do all the homework as well. You can't assume they're going to come in and assess. Because haven't you seen, you've seen brands close down in malls?
Right. Yeah.
You have seen franchises right. close yeah, down yeah. in malls.
But right. why is but, it? I mean, would you own a franchise?
Well, I would. Something I actually, interestingly, I've been thinking about recently.
Okay, what kind of a franchise?
With a group of, well... food.
okay, food and beverage.
Food and beverage, you know, that sort of space.
Yes.
And what I actually wanted to ask you.
Sure.
Because while you were talking about, you know, sharing your experience, I was reminded about something, a concept I found in a book that was written by Ubab Muzikuzwai.
Okay.
The book Black Medicine.
Okay, yes. Black Man's Medicine.
Black Man's Medicine, yes.
Right.
Black Man's Medicine.
Shout out to Muzi.
Shout out to him. So he basically shares a concept in the book.
Yes.
Which has to do with it's connected to your to what you're sharing now
yes.
in the sense that here you are. You are, you know, you used to own this Cardi's franchise, and this is the experience that you had, and these are the lessons that you learned. Okay, so basically, this is reflective, yes. based on your experience.
Sure.
So
sure.
it's almost like a postmortem.
Yes.
And he speaks about that. He speaks about the concept of postmortems and premortems.
Right.
And how that with postmortems, you're basically looking at the experience and in retrospect, drawing lessons, you know, to basically help you rationalize what you've been through.
Sure.
And therefore sort of create then a canvas on which to paint, you know, the future.
Right.
But then he speaks about the concept of a premortem as being more powerful. Because then that is what you basically do to help you. Number one, you know, you foresee the things that could actually get you into trouble.
Yeah.
And then take the necessary steps to deal with those things. So for an ordinary young person or somebody who is a novice in business, who doesn't yes. know much about franchising, like you were when you started.
Right.
If you had to list maybe three things, you know, or a few key things that you would basically say, if you are thinking about going into franchising, here are the three or four, whatever number,
yes,
key things
yes, yes.
that you should meet, you know, be sure that you do.
Right. The first thing, which I would have done differently is if I'm thinking of a franchise, I would rather go and talk to the people already in those franchises.
Right.
I didn't do that. I mean, it didn't cross my mind. Is really to talk to people who are involved in that sector and really get from the ground up what the experience really like.
Right.
That would be the one. The second one, I think, do a lot more homework on the market and the ability of the market where you're thinking of setting up to buy your product.
Right.
Because I think the franchises were very good. Mm. They were very good at setup.
Mm.
They were very good in getting the product in there.
Mm.
They were very good at delivering on that score. Right. And in a sense, they do get you closer to running a business. It's definitely so.
Mm.
But I think the responsibility for yourself to be totally comfortable that you're going to actually make a success there based on your own feeling and your own research coupled with what they say and then the next thing is that I often look back and say, well, if you're going to go into this business, is it right for you?
Right.
So in other words, it's not just about the franchise concept and can I afford it. and it makes sort of sense from a control point of view.
Right.
Is it right for you? Do you identify with it? Can you see yourself doing it? Like, for example, if you are going to buy a franchise that involved the beauty business, mm-hmm. right? And you, as the owner, are refusing to do the actual service. In other words, you don't actually want to go there and cut somebody's hair. You don't want to go there and actually do somebody's nails. And then you're essentially an owner. So then the question is you are actually at risk? Because if you want to be this investor type, when things go wrong, can you actually get involved? Do you identify with that strongly enough that you will do it?
Right.
And just before, I just wanted to ask you something.
Sure.
Why are like black businesses so unfranchisable?
that's a tough question. What kind of business?
Like I think. I look at fish and chips, for example. Something we all grew up with.
Which yes. Is,
you know, the corner cafe, the Greeks or the Portuguese people would own those shops, and it was just something we grew up with. Mm. Now I look at it, and there was a fish and chips concept, not right. black owned, mm. but selling our concept that we grew up with. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's one. Chisanyama. Mm-hmm. Is not, for example, and yet you then look at like a Mug and Bean, which is very clear, a Wimpy, a news cafe. Why are our businesses so
I think we don't think about those businesses in that sense. So the people who look at the concept
right.
have the vision of saying, well, I'm going to take this concept.
Right.
I'm going to initially make sure it works.
Right.
And it works exceptionally well. Yeah. And I'm going to standardize the way we do this.
Okay.
With the vision of not owning one, but owning 10.
Mm. Right.
So a lot of times people start a business, they're good at it, but they're not thinking franchise. They're thinking me, my needs, I'm making money, and that's the level it stays at.
Right.
I think the purpose from the very beginning in a concept is to say, okay, how can I make this a standard thing that I can roll out? And then you structure your business very differently.
Right.
Because then you're almost coming to say, well, I'm going to do one, but I'm going to structure it in a way that it can run without me. Mm. And then I'm going to do 2, 3, and 4. And once you've done that, you've set up these relationships, you've worked out a process, you've done all the homework.
Right.
And then you begin to get other people to invest and you start a family. I think that vision sometimes was not even an option for many people.
Right.
They simply started a business, they made money, they took care of their needs, and it stays there. I ask that same question on a lot of things that I see.
Yeah.
How come it hasn't been? And it's always somebody from the outside that sometimes sees the opportunity that you've been sitting on your entire life.
Right.
I want to come back to your specific question, and I completely agree. You're very correct. But your specific question, Monobisi, is why are black businesses so unfranchisable? Mm. That's what you said.
Right.
Yeah, he did say.
You know, and I understand you have to be diplomatic.
Yeah,
he's always diplomatic. I always try and upset him, and it just doesn't work.
So, you know, it's a good thing that I'm here today, because as a black man, I can be real.
Okay.
But here's my thing. The first thing I would say is, black businesses are franchisable, because when you say why are they not franchisable, you're talking about do they have the capacity to be. So there is the capacity in terms of potential, so
yes.
It's there.
Yeah,
you know, so there must be other reasons as to why it's not happening.
What do you think those
other reasons? What do you think?
And that's where we need to draw into. One of the things that really upset me, and I'm looking at all the things that are happening, particularly in our country right now and current affairs and all these outbreaks of racism and this blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
You know, black people ranting and raving, very angry, all this sort of thing. I understand that to a significant extent, there is merit to some of those emotions and to some of, you know, all those concerns and all of that, you know, stuff. But I think that as black people, we also need to start learning to be honest with ourselves.
Okay.
We have problems, Monobis.
But like any other nation.
No. But what I'm saying is, yes, but we don't want to embrace the fact that we have problems. We'd rather make excuses. There are two problems that are limiting black people's development in many areas.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what they are.
Right.
Number one is disorganization. I don't know, and I don't believe that this is inherent or genetic to the black man. I think
genetic.
I think it's the result of our history as black people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Some of the things we've been subjected to.
Okay.
But there's a whole conversation that can be had there.
Okay.
But by and large, and you know, we are disorganized, and that's the bottom line.
Right.
And we have to admit that to ourselves. The second one is we are not united.
Okay.
So disunity and lack of organization. You know, I know a friend who started a business.
Yeah.
Branded it beautifully. It was going, you know, the right direction in the food and beverage space.
Right.
Beautifully branded, new thing, black owned, black concept, you know, was doing well. The black people he hired ran it down.
Sure. Guys, I'm going to end it off there. But before I do, there's something I'd like to play off with. And Katesh, it's been great having you.
Thank you.
Mohale Waruna, aka Wamurena. Waruna Wamurena. Chisa. So now I can just remix and add another name there. But thank you, guys. Let me know what you think of this.
So how? What's the solution?
So how do we get that?
Well, here's the thing. We got to recognize that wealth is created. Most people who get rich don't get rich in a lifetime. Oprah, that's once in a while. Bill Gates, that's once in a while. Most people are intergenerational wealth. That means what? That if black people want to catch up, we have to start saving wealth and passing it to the next generation. Our biggest problem ain't that we're splurging.
This is CliffCentral.com.